Welcome to the SOAP video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We have come like to the end of the book.
We are in, yeah. Yeah, MAPS is next.
MAPS is next and the little concordance or whatever at the end. Now, we have not done all of the stuff in between, but yeah. We've made it to the end.
Yeah, right. Right. So what's cool is, and we're in the book of Revelation.
In case you didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. But God's wrath has been poured out.
Done.
Yeah. Right? What was the first judgment? Trumpet judgments.
The seals, then the trumpets, and then the bowls, right?
Yeah. All have been poured out. So God's wrath is out. Now we have some cleanup we have to go out.
Yeah.
Go up to. And then the last thing is the really fun part. What's it going to be like for us in heaven?
And when we talk about God's wrath, we're talking specifically about what the Old Testament calls the Day of the Lord, or the Great Day of the Lord, or the Tribulation.
Yeah, the Great, the Wonderful, and awful.
The Great and Terrible. Yeah, yeah, great and terrible Day of the Lord. And that that is about the 7 years that we call the Tribulation, right? In Jeremiah, it's called the Day of Jacob's Trouble because it's specifically focused on Israel. It's to purify Israel, and it's to punish the Gentile nations. So, now that's been done.
Right.
Okay, so there's still some war left here in chapter 20. There's still some punishment, but that's not what we're talking about. The wrath of God, the Day of the Lord, the punishment part of the Day of the Lord has been completed.
Yeah. So the first thing that happens is what happens to Satan.
Yeah.
Right? So an angel comes down from heaven with a key, and we've seen this key before. It's a key to the abyss.
Yep.
And what that really means is Satan returned the key. So if you remember, if you're following along, there were locusts that came out of the abyss.
Yeah.
And a star fell from heaven, and it was probably Satan, you know.
Could be. Maybe, yeah. We're talking about chapter 9, so a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. But somebody had the key and opened it to allow the locusts to come out.
Right.
Then they must have returned the key to heaven.
My guess is that it was closed and locked again. Yep. Because that's, you know.
Right. Right. So just one of the, you know, does that really mean anything? No, not at all. But it's kind of a fun thing to go through.
Yeah.
But Satan was seized and was bound and tossed into the abyss for 1,000 years.
Yep.
And then it even says after that he'll have to be released for a little while.
Yeah.
So the millennial kingdom is going to take place with Satan bound and not involved, and then he'll come back.
Yeah. So we take this very literally. Some people look at 1,000 years here as symbolic or something. Right. Six times in seven verses it says 1,000 years, 1,000 years, 1,000 years. Yeah. I'm taking it to mean 1,000 years. Yeah. And that's where we get our word millennium. Millennium is Latin for 1,000 years, milla and annum.
Right.
So millennium is 1,000 years.
Yeah. So we do get some information about the millennial kingdom also. So it looks like martyrs, which would have been beheaded tribulation saints.
Yep.
So people that have come to Christ during that 7 years that were martyred because of their beliefs. And by the way, they were beheaded.
Yeah, which tells us a little bit about how Satan's system is going to treat believers in the tribulation.
Right, yeah. Anyways, they're going to be raised and they're going to become judges.
Yeah.
And reign with Christ for 1,000 years, which is pretty cool. And then we see a line in there that says the rest of the dead won't come back until after the 1,000 years has finished.
Right.
So who's the rest of this dead?
So the rest of the dead, when you look at the entire understanding of the whole Bible, has to be all unbelievers of all time. Because Daniel 12 tells us that Old Testament saints are going to be resurrected to go into the kingdom. They didn't know it was 1,000 years yet, but this is Messiah's kingdom. So they'll have been resurrected. Church saints were resurrected at the rapture, so we're going into it. Tribulation saints now have been resurrected, so who's dead?
Right, who's left?
Just unbelievers.
Right.
So all unbelievers of all time will not be resurrected until after the 1,000 years, and we'll see that at the second half of this chapter.
Now think of the 1,000 years for a minute. Satan is no longer there. There will be some living people, believers, that didn't die in the tribulation period.
Yep.
They're going to go into this 1,000 years. and they're going to have a lot of babies.
Yeah.
Right? I would think that the population is just going to explode.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, because by the time we get to the end of the 1,000 years, the unbelievers, people who were born during that time and did not believe, are counted as numerous as the grains of sand in the sea.
Yeah.
That's just the unbelievers. That doesn't include the believers during that 1,000 years. So yeah, that's a lot of people.
Well, that also means a couple things, right? It means that you have a man and woman that came out that were believers,
yep,
had kids, and those kids have a choice.
Yep.
And that choice can either be for God or not for God.
Yeah, to accept or reject him, right? Yep. Now, I was just going to say that the Old Testament tells us the demons are going to be locked away during this time too. So there's no external evil influence. Jesus is ruling as king. This is the closest you're going to get to utopia.
Right.
So how do people not believe?
And we're still sinning.
Because they will still have their sin natures and sin. Yeah.
Right. So you got to, and it also says during this time, Jesus is going to reign with an iron scepter.
Yeah.
Right. Which maybe he literally has an iron scepter, but it's also going to be a strong reign,
yeah,
and his will in there.
Yeah.
So you got to believe that there's going to be people that are faking that, mm-hmm, they're believers,
yep,
and people with disobedience that maybe can't show it in ways that they want to show it.
Yeah, so they'll be right with the law. Here's how I say it. Yeah. They'll be right with the law, but they won't be right with the king.
Yeah, that's, you know, really
right,
good way
right
to put
with
it.
God. Yeah. This is the period, if you've heard passages like or references like the wolf lies down with the lamb in Isaiah chapter 11, you know, when a little child can play at the den of a serpent or whatever. That's this period, because the curse on earth has been lifted now. Curse on creation has been lifted.
Yep.
So animals are getting along, people are getting along with animals the way it was supposed to be. Now, there's still sin. Satan hasn't been finally judged yet. There are still unbelievers who haven't been judged yet. So it's not perfect yet, but it's as close to perfect as this sinful creation or the sin-tainted creation is ever going to see.
Yeah. Then in this chapter, in chapter 20, there's a huge battle that takes one or two lines.
Yeah.
Right? Satan's going to be released after the 1,000 years, and then again, guess what? He deceives the nations.
That's what
he
does.
Brings them together for a battle. It's like, wait. This is the second battle after the 1,000 years.
This is not Armageddon. This is not, you know, second coming. This is another one. Yeah.
The bad guys circle around Jerusalem, and God rains fire down from heaven, and the war's over.
Yep.
Satan is then thrown into the lake of fire, and the beast and the false prophet are there. And
now, here's what's interesting about this.
Yep.
It says, the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet are, not were.
Right, so they're still there.
They're still there 1,000 years later. Now, what's interesting or important is that the beast and the false prophet are humans. So humans are able to survive in this lake of fire for 1,000 earth years, for 1,000 literal right, years, without being burnt up, without being consumed, without being whatever, okay? That tells us, that's one of several things that tell us that the lake of fire, whatever this fire is not the same type of fire that we're used to, that's like, oh, it's going to burn my hand off.
Right.
It's not consuming the enemies the way we typically think of consume. 1,000 years later, they're still there in conscious torment.
But this is also where we get hell, fire, brimstone.
Yeah. So what we're saying is that there are people out there that say, well, yes, God's enemies will be thrown into the lake of fire and they're going to be burnt up.
Right.
I'm saying after,
that's not what it says.
After 1,000 years, they're not burnt up yet. And the smoke of their torment, it's described in other places, the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever. This teaches eternal conscious torment of God's enemies.
Then we have the great white throne.
Yeah.
So this is the judgment of these unbelievers.
Yeah, all unbelievers of all time, dating back to, whether you want to call it Adam and Eve or Cain or whatever, whoever, you know, the first unbelievers who never believed, will all be resurrected, small and great, it says, from whether they died in the sea, whether they were buried in the ground. all resurrected to stand before final judgment.
And they say the books are open, which is an awesome thought. And it turns out that there's a number of books, right? So the books are open, and these books contain a record of these people's deeds.
Yeah.
And they're going to be judged by them.
Yeah.
And they're unsafe, so there's no hope. But there does seem to be judgment based on what they did or didn't do.
Yeah, so
it's different levels of punishment.
It seems like it has to be different levels of punishment, similar to what we're talking about, like for Christians, different levels of reward when we're judged at the judgment seat of Christ. In neither case, the judgment seat of Christ and the great white throne, destiny is not being determined by our works. Right. Punishment or reward is being determined, but the destiny is already fixed. You're either believed, or you're a believer, or you're not a believer, and your destiny is based on that, not the books of works.
Okay. And this judgment and what happens afterwards is the second death.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because death means separation, right? So physical death is the separation of body and spirit. Spiritual death. So they've already died. Most of them have already. In fact, all of them, I guess, have died physically. But now they're going to die spiritually forever, be separated from God forever. And that's why he calls it the second death.
Okay. So that happens, the great white throne happens. And now we go into chapter 21 and 22, which is now what happens to us.
Yeah, eternity.
Yeah, the right. Eternal state. And we get some glimpses on what eternity looks like.
Not a lot, though.
No matter what, we're always going to want more. But
There's some really awesome cool stuff. There's definitely some cool stuff, but this leaves a whole lot more questions than it gives answers, I think.
Yeah, but I think what's cool is there's a new heaven and a new earth.
Yeah.
And God says, look, I'm making all things new.
Yeah.
So, a new house, a new car is always special, right?
Yep.
And now we have a new heaven and a new earth.
Yep.
And the big difference is God is now with us.
Yeah. And that's really been the thing from the very beginning. Shameless plug, at the end of my book, Biblical Discipleship, I put a couple of pages that shows that God's presence with people has always been the thing that he's been, chasing or pursuing, but that's what he's really wanted from Genesis 1. We're the ones who messed it up.
Right.
And finally, he's the one who makes it right. So it's really cool.
I love there's a line there that says, it is done.
Yeah.
And, it just takes you back to Jesus being on the cross. So there's done and there's done, right? I mean, Jesus was done with that part when he was on the cross.
Yeah.
And now he's done with this part, which is this new heaven and new earth. And it's done.
We've got the Alpha and the Omega, which links back to chapter 1. So this is really
coming really full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sea existed no more. Kind of a side note there. But then a spirit takes John into Jerusalem, which is coming down from heaven. So there's a new
Jerusalem too. Yeah.
Coming down.
Yep.
And it's populated by the bride. And I think last week we talked about, who exactly the bride is. And there's some question about whether it's all believers or whether it's just the Christian believers of the time.
So it sounds like the bride might be Jerusalem itself here. It says, let me show you the bride. And what he showed him was this new Jerusalem coming out of heaven. So, it's really interesting.
Yeah, John does give, he tries really hard to explain what it looks like.
Yeah.
there's 24 gates. It's a massive city. What is it, 1,400 square miles? Miles?
Yeah.
In width and length and height.
And height, too, yeah.
Which is bizarre, right? Because today we go up 60 miles and we're in outer space.
Yeah.
And 1,400 miles is like...
Yeah. Now, the wall's not that tall, but the city itself somehow extends that tall. Some people have made it like a point, a pyramid or whatever. Pyramid. So 12 gates and 12 foundations, okay? And it's really interesting because the gates have the names of the 12 tribes of Israel, and the foundations have the names of the 12 apostles.
Yeah, which seems a little backwards, right?
It
does to me. From the standpoint of the apostles, or the Old Testament saints came first.
Yeah. Right. But salvation was through the Jews. The Messiah came from the Jewish people. So Israel has always been like that entrance point.
Yeah.
But then there's the foundations where it's built on the message of the 12 apostles too, right?
Right.
So
do you think the distinction between Jews and Christians will, I mean, that's one difference there. Yeah. You think that'll continue on the inside?
Yeah, so Israel and the church are two distinct groups, right? So there is definitely going to be a visual distinction or a visual reminder of the distinction. How much that plays out is one of those questions that we don't have the answer
could
to.
Could be I'm going over the Jewish side.
Like Jewish quarter today. Or whatever, Yeah. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't think so. I know that you get down to, I don't remember what verse it is now. Verse 24, the nations will walk by its light. The kings of the earth will bring their grandeur into it. So it's not like everybody's going to be living in there. The whole earth seems like it's going to be populated with, again, we're talking about the believers of all time, the saints of all the ages, right?
Yeah.
Some will be living in, some will not be living in.
Well, it also says that nothing unclean will come in.
Yeah.
So, which means that there's unclean things outside.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. It could just be, I forget the technical term now, but it could just refer to there's not going to be anything that comes into it, partially because there's not going to be anything unclean that even exists at this point.
Yeah.
Can't even come close. So,
I do think that it is definitely fun to think about, right? Are we going to be living in Jerusalem? If there's going to be people that are outside of Jerusalem, is that good, bad? You know, how is that decision, right? How's that decision made? And then they're bringing the grandeur in, which means somebody's got to have jobs.
Yeah.
Right? They're building something. They're making something.
Yeah.
And is this, out of wood? Is it out of gold? Is it artistic? Exactly.
So I envision, because
the internet speeds be high.
Yeah, finally good internet.
Will there even be machines?
Yeah. So what I do know is that Revelation 21:22 is sort of like the intention of Genesis 1 and 2. You know, God created all things to be perfect. He created his presence and our, us together. We messed that up. He's been working to put it back. And now this is the ideal of what it was supposed to be to begin with. So what could have been had Genesis 1 and 2 not turned into Genesis 3 with sin, right? What could have been? I think this tells us what could, sort of gives us a hint of what could have been. So is there technology, or not is there technology, but what technology are we going to have? Who knows?
Yeah, one thing is there's no temple. So we do know that, and we've talked a lot about the temples and in various times, especially through Revelation, but there's no need for it.
Yeah.
Right? Jesus is there with us. He is the temple.
Yeah. I mean, right now, the church is the temple because the Holy Spirit is living in us.
Right.
Well, now we'll be with him, and there's no sacrifices, definitely, but the tabernacle and the temple has always been about presence. And again, the presence, he's there.
Yeah. Chapter 22 talks about water pouring out from the throne. So I see the throne up high, and I see a water slide.
Yeah.
No one's gonna be on the water slide. But
you don't know that.
That is true. But it seems like no one will be on that. But water is flowing through Main Street.
Yeah.
Through the main part of the street. So I had to look up, like, how fast can water move? If a drop of water was just a drop, what's the terminal velocity? And it's 20 miles an hour. It's pretty quick for water being moving.
Yeah, it could be a pretty cool water slide.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is that Ezekiel saw something. Now, with Ezekiel, it's hard to tell sometimes. Is it the millennial kingdom? Is it the eternal kingdom? Whatever. I think it's the millennium there in Ezekiel, but he sees it coming out of the throne running to the Dead Sea, and it gets deeper and faster in stages.
Uh-huh.
So at the end of Ezekiel, it's really interesting.
Nice. Yeah. Because some, yeah.
It's you just, know, at first it's up to
his ankles. How does it get back up there? How
yeah.
Does
it, you know, yeah, at first right? it's at his ankles, and then it's up to his calves, and then it's up to his knees, mm-hmm. and then it's waist high, and he can't stand in it anymore, and that type of thing. Nice. So it could be very similar to what we're seeing here.
So also there's the tree of life, and it's in the river somehow. It's either on the bank, or there's a middle of the river, or
both sides has both sides.
Yeah, it kind of goes down. Yep.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. And these trees produce fruit, and 12 times a year. So once a month, it's producing a different fruit, which means we may or may not have seasons, but there's going to be a passage of time.
Time. Yeah. That's, I think that's one of the interesting things that we need to remember is that when we think of eternity, we think of no time at all. Right. But eternity doesn't mean no time. It means time without end, endless right. time. So there will be passage of time. We will see that happening. But it's just never going to end.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
There's a line in there that says, the leaves are for the healing of the nations.
Yeah. That one has stumped people for a long time. I still don't know what that means.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, only one thing out of the Revelation. I don't know what it means.
It's yeah, pretty right. good, it's right? pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Okay, so we're really coming to the end here.
Yeah.
So I do have a question that comes up from people, and it kind of boils down to, we as human beings, what's our job? Is our job to make the end times come faster, or should we be slowing it down?
Well, we know that according to Romans chapter 11. There is a full number or a fixed number of Gentiles that are going to be saved right. during the church age, which kicks off the next thing, you know, the rapture and then the tribulation and everything after that. So 2 Peter 3 says, knowing what we know about the end times, which is a lot, yeah. but it's not everything, knowing what we know, knowing that this is going to come, what kind of people should we be? How should we live now? Yeah. Hastening the day of the Lord. So Peter says in 2 Peter 3, we can actually speed it up. When you bring these two together, how do you speed it up? By sharing the gospel, right?
Right.
When that full number of Gentiles is saved, that's going to kick off the next thing. So we can, I think, actually speed up that time.
Well,
from our standpoint anyway.
And we are given one major job, and yeah. that is to share the gospel anyways.
Yeah, share the gospel, make disciples, right?
Right. So it seems that no matter what happens, our job is to continue to share the gospel.
Well, we see that here in the end of the chapter. The Spirit and the bride say, come. Right? It's that invitation. Let the one who hears say, come, and let the one who is thirsty come and take freely from the water of life. No restrictions. You just have to come to Jesus and respond.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's awesome. The great invitation at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I think we're done.
We are. And so
it's a fire hose.
Yeah. I know. By way of benediction, the very last line of the book, the very last line of the whole thing, we have some other books that we need to go back and okay. do these for, but as we close this out, the grace of the Lord Jesus be with all. And that's really what we're looking for. Jesus says, I'm coming quickly. We say with John, come Lord Jesus. Come. Yeah. Come, Lord Jesus.
We always had the second come at the end. Yeah, it's not on there. It was a different translation.
So may his grace be with you as you study the scriptures. We hope that these videos are beneficial to you. As you have questions, as always, send them this way. But for now, next time we'll start a new book. See you then.
Bye, everybody.